Well, you don't exist as a church today, apparently, if you're not on social media. In fact, you probably don't exist personally if you're not on social media. That's what we've been told. And Facebook is old hat. It's the bread and butter. Instagram's more the thing these days if you're young, apparently. I Instagram, therefore I Insta-am. And if you Google church and Instagram, there are whole websites dedicated to ensuring how your Instagram account could get airplay. It tells you the hashtags that matter. Not too many posts that you shouldn't, you know, bombard people with it. The right kind of images and tone that you should have on your Instagram account, apparently, because, you know, I'm not looking at those things. But here's a list of suggestions that I read online that say, here's how you use your Instagram account for your church the best way you possibly can, so you can get the message out there. You put your service times up. Now, that seems like obvious, doesn't it? You put your service times up. You have Volunteer of the Week. That's fantastic, isn't it? Volunteer of the Week. There's a guarantee that you will not get your reward in heaven, but you can have it here and now by being Volunteer of the Week, and your rewards can be in this age. You can highlight moments from your service. You know, zone in with the drone. There's probably a drone in here even now, taking pictures of people sleeping and things like that. And you can show newcomers what your service actually looks like. If you get all that right, you can blow up. As they say, social media heaven, right? Well, the church plant in the city of Thessalonica blew up, and it blew up well before Instagram arrived. The bloke who planted it, Paul the Apostle, had this to say about the Jesus followers in that city. For not only has the word of the Lord sounded forth from you in Macedonia and Achaia, this is verse 8 of chapter 1, but your faith in God has gone forth everywhere, so that we need not say anything. The church in Thessalonica was trending big time. Other churches throughout the region had heard about them. In fact, Paul says in verse 7, you became a model to all the believers. Now, Instagram has a lot of models on it, but here's a model church that's trending around the area that people say, if you're going to look like church, that's a great church to look like. If you're going to look like the people of God gathered, this would be a good example to follow. But it wasn't their social media campaign that made them blow up. It wasn't the Volunteer of the Week that made them the group to follow. It wasn't their music or all those things, or those funky pictures of their worship services that made them so attractive to all the other churches and made them trend. What made them trend? What does it say? Verse 6, and you became imitators. Whoops, one more. I'll do that. And you became imitators of us and of the Lord, for you received the word in much affliction with the joy of the Holy Spirit. Affliction and joy are words that go together all the time in my life. Anyway, they blew up because they decided that like Jesus and like Paul, they would suffer, put up with shame for the sake of the gospel, that they would cope with the affliction that came with deciding that they were going to serve Jesus. But they did it not just in a gloomy sort of, oh, well, I've got to put up with it, it's more than my job's worth kind of thing. It says with joy. They put up with affliction with joy. And Acts 17 is the story of how the gospel actually came to the city of Thessalonica. And it tells us that when the gospel message came to this pagan city, it started well. People trusted Jesus. But a whole bunch of people then came in who opposed that message, and the place went into a riot. It nearly tore the place apart. And Paul, who'd planted the church, had to leave the city quick smart. And if you think being a Christian was dangerous in Thessalonica, then what would you probably do? You'd probably keep your head down. You think, I saw what happened to Paul. I know what happened to Jesus because Paul told me what happened to Jesus. How about we keep our heads down in this city? How about we not make a fuss? You'd shut down your social media account quicker than someone on Twitter who's been hassled for their political views, wouldn't you? But not these guys. They did the opposite. What does it say, verse 8? It says in verse 8 that they received the message with joy, for not only has the word of the Lord sounded forth from you in Macedonia and Achaia, but your faith in God has gone forth everywhere so that we need say nothing. It's not as if they kept their heads down when it got tough. It's a bit like the church in China at the moment, as you read about it. The Chinese authorities are cracking down on the Christian church there because it's another god against the state. You think twice in China before putting your service time and location on social media. That's the thing you probably don't want to do. But funnily enough, everyone around the world is hearing what is going on in the Chinese church because of the suffering. Not because they're hip and funky and they're trending on social media, but because of their faith and their love for Jesus in the midst of trouble, in the midst of affliction. And that's what's going on back in the first century. It's not as if things were any different over 2,000 years of church history. And Paul offers us three images, three Instagram pics, if you like, that define the church in Thessalonica. And I reckon if they defined us, that would be a good way to trend. What are those images? Turn, serve, and wait. Verse 9. What does it say in verses 9 and 10? For they themselves report concerning us the kind of reception we had among you, and how you turned to God from idols to serve the living and true God, and to wait for his Son from heaven, whom he raised from the dead, Jesus who delivers us from the wrath to come. Turn, serve, and wait. If you go on Instagram, on the Church of Thessalonica, there those pictures are. These are three defining features of the church. So let's see how they might help us as God's people in our churches in Perth today, where the afflictions, I'd say, not quite as much. Not quite as much. So the first thing is turn. They turned to God from idols. What does it say? They turned to God from idols. Here's what marks this bunch. They turned to something from something. They were going in this direction, and they turned around and went in that direction. And the question is, to what did they turn and from what did they turn? And the passage is very clear. They turned to a capital G God, in our way of putting it, from small g gods, idols. It wasn't that they turned from gods to nothing or to a god from nothing. It was all God on the plane. It was from small g gods to capital G God. And this is crucial to understand, that they didn't turn to God from nothing. They didn't become worshippers from being non-worshippers. They started worshipping something else. They already were worshippers. They just started worshipping someone different. That they worshipped was not up for grabs. Who they worshipped was up for grabs. David Foster Wallace was an atheist author who recently died, and he spoke at the commencement address at the Liberal Arts College, Kenyon College in the United States, a university in the US, in which all the finest liberal arts students go, and they're about to go into the brave new world. And he said this to a bunch of people who generally were claiming to be atheists. In the day-to-day trenches of adult life, there is actually no such thing as atheism. There is no such thing as not worshipping. Everybody worships. The only choice we get is what to worship. The only choice we get is what to worship. Everybody worships. And for the Thessalonians, before Paul came along and preached the gospel, that looked like worshipping an idol. Something that was a small g god. Now, what about us? You see, if everyone's a worshipper, then everyone in our culture, not just these people here today, worships. And our culture worships what? Freedom for themselves, autonomy of what to do with their bodies, choice, sexual satisfaction, financial independence, the right to forge our own identities, self-fulfillment, pleasure, the list is endless. Small g gods. But here's the kicker. The church is not immune from that. We're not immune from that as God's people. What if we say, you know, actually, I come here on Sunday, but I'll decide my theological stance on this, that, or the other, or the Bible says this about sexuality, but really, I'm going to live this way anyway. You see, our independent streak, our desire to worship something or someone other than the holy God, leaks into everything. That's why we come here to say, I want the scales taken off my eyes because I've been at risk of worshipping something other than the one true God this week. You see, whatever we give our time, attention, and our love to, that if it were taken away, we'd be totally devastated. That's our idol. That's what we worship. And if you're not a worshipper of God, of the Lord Jesus here today, the first step towards becoming one, I think, is to recognize that you're actually a worshipper of something already. You won't go from non-worship to worship. You'll go from one form of worship to another form of worship. Bob Dylan, you got to serve somebody. You're doing it. The gospel calls you to that. Turn from worshipping that to worship of this. That we worship is not up for question. Who or what we worship is up for grabs. Here's the thing, though. Turning to and from comes at a cost. For the Thessalonians, they were suffering, being persecuted, precisely because they had turned to God from idols. Their whole city, their whole way of life, meaning in their city, was based upon worship of idols, socially, culturally, relationally. Life was built around idol worship. Food from the marketplace was offered to idols. You went to your club or your community group and idol worship was front and center. To stop that, to reject that, was to be rejected yourself. You couldn't just have a small God-shaped place in your heart where you could do this privately in your home. It affected everything. And once it affects everything in your life and then the life of all these people, it starts to become a challenge to the culture that's still worshipping idols. And that's exactly what happened everywhere the gospel went. Everywhere the gospel went, it looked like something changed. Acts 17 verses 6 to 7 tells us the story of what happened. Acts 17, when they get to Thessalonica. And verses 6 to 7, a mob riot breaks out and they go looking for all the people who are causing all this trouble. And verse 6, it says, if you've got your hand out, and when they could not find them, they dragged Jason and some of the brothers before the city authorities, shouting, "These men who have turned the world upside down have come here also." You don't turn the world upside down by having a special place for God in your heart that no one knows about. You turn the world upside down because everything you do together as the people of this God is contrary to everything that people are doing who are worshipping the idols. Life looks different. Do you get it? Turning to God from idols is dangerous. We will be accused of upsetting the order of things, worshipping King Jesus throws everything out of whack. I hope you feel the weight of that as a people, as a church. And it'd probably be good to get known for that, wouldn't it? That North Coast church crowd, hey, we say that anyway, but I mean, that North Coast church crowd, they've thrown everything out of whack. They've upset the natural order of things in Perth. They are going around forgiving people in this world who should not be forgiven. They're sexually pure in a sexually promiscuous world. And they're doing stupid things like loving their enemies. Whoever got anywhere doing that? They're actually doing good to those who hate them. They're generous when everyone else is storing up stuff for themselves. They're being content when everyone else is just click and buying all the time. I hope you want to be accused of that kind of turn the world upside down. That's what turning to God from idols will look like in our lives collectively together. Turn. Oops. Second one, serve. Turn, serve. What does it say? You turned to God from idols to serve the living and true God. Well, remember David Foster Wallace and his commencement service at that college, his comment about worship. He goes on to say this. An outstanding reason for choosing some sort of God or spiritual type of thing to worship is that pretty much anything else you worship will eat you alive. He goes on, if you worship money and things, if they are where you tap real meaning in life, then you will never have enough, never feel you have enough. It's the truth. Worship your own body and beauty and sexual allure, and you will always feel ugly. And when time and age start showing, you will die a million deaths before they finally bury you. Don't make a difference, people. And you know, what a cheery way to finish that conversation. But that's prophetic to a bunch of 20-year-olds, 25-year-olds who are about to launch into the big bad world and go, I'm going to take this. And he goes, actually, you better get this stuff sorted out now before you die. See, what he's saying, in other words, the things we think are serving us, making us the best Instagram versions of ourselves, can be money and things, beauty, sexual identity, but they're actually our masters. We serve them. They don't serve us. But we are fooled by them into thinking it's the other way around. And as David Foster Wallace says, that is false. It will eat you alive. And that's why the program here on exploring Jesus is probably key, because you're serving somebody, even if you're not serving Jesus. They will lead to death. So contrast that with the God of Paul, with the God that the Thessalonians turned to when they followed Jesus. What defines this God, says Paul? True, who Jesus is, who God is true, and living. Mostly he knows that because God has raised Jesus from the dead. But a true God will never lie to you. And you can lie to yourself in this culture, or have other people lie to you, or have social media lie to you, but the one true God of the Bible and of the Lord Jesus will never lie to you. Will never lie to you. And the one true God of the Bible will never lead you to death, and especially won't lead you to death by saying, actually, this is the path to life, which is what the culture will say. This is the path to life. Walk down this path and you will be fulfilled. And the truth is, if you walk down that path and away from the living God, you will walk towards death. And you might even die a million deaths before they finally bury you, or you might have the best experience of life ever, but one day they will bury you nonetheless. That's what it leads to. Death. Can you see how empowering what Paul says is? Even if you're in trouble for being a Christian, whether that's the workplace and it's getting harder, whether that's school, wherever that is, in family, if you're feeling the pressure or affliction or just sneering for being a Christian, even if the rest of the world says the church is wrong, the future looks like Jesus. The future looks like the living God deciding how things are going to be. Even if the culture says, here's what's true, not what you think, even if the cultural Instagram says, here's what real living looks like, even if all the social media is bright and shiny, it's a bright and shiny lie that will lead you to death. Which means something. Our first stance towards the world that rejects us should not be fierce anger. It should be pity and love. And love. The people are heading towards death. Physical and spiritual death. Why would you serve something, anything, that is a deadly lie? That should compel us to go from here joyously and share the living God's message. If we really felt the sting of that, we'd be gagging to tell people about the Jesus who alone is the living truth. And we'd do it joyfully, even if we got the same treatment that the Thessalonian church did. If you're a Christian here today, let me give you the confidence that the living truth will eventually repel those who are still serving deadly lies. And it might even attract them. See, it will attract those from whom the stuff of life isn't working anymore, who are starting to realize that they are slaves, that they are worshiping something that will lead them to death. In the midst of this cultural change that we're going through, that's the point of joy. That people could look at us and go, you know what? I don't like what they believe, but gee, the way they live looks amazing. Maybe there's something in it. People who are slaves might want to serve King Jesus when they see how good the life is that he offers. Serve. Finally, wait. Wait. What does it say? For they themselves report concerning us the kind of reception we had among you, how you turned to God from idols to serve the living and true God, and to wait for his Son from heaven, whom he raised from the dead, Jesus, who delivers us from the wrath to come. Now, I've started a second job. They pay me so poorly. No, I started a second job because I'm 2 days a week at church and I work nationally for City Bible Forum, which is an evangelistic ministry to city workers. And I go to Sydney quite a bit and I always feel out of place in Sydney. I look like the man from Ironbark, if you know the reference, going to do the Sydney Toff. And a few months ago, I had to go to a thing called the Bridge Street Fellowship on the 25th floor of an office block. It looked like the grand piano ballroom of the Titanic, peering out over the city. I felt like Nebuchadnezzar looking down at Babylon. And it was a very swanky set. This is specifically for high-end financiers such as myself. And it was all suits, and me in jeans and this amazing shirt. And John Anderson, the former Deputy Prime Minister, was there. It was like, oh, you know? I felt like I should be serving the drinks, not taking a drink. So I thought I should have a conversation with a few people. And there's this guy suited up, looking pretty spiffy. And he was a Christian. And he lived in the North Shore suburbs of Sydney, which aren't too bad, I've decided. When I win lotto, that's where you want to live. But we were chatting, I said, so tell me about what your day looks like. He goes, I've had a long-term sick wife. My wife has been ill for years. I have two young sons with severe autism. And my job every day is to get up and help my wife get her day started, get the boys ready and take them to their special needs school. And then I come into the city and I work for 8 to 9 hours. Then I go home and I launder and repeat that every day, and life is really hard. And he said, but do you know what my hope is? And I was going, please, Lord, don't let it be my payout at the end of the year. He goes, I'm hanging out for Jesus to come back. Here you are on the 25th floor of an amazing building in Sydney with very wealthy people who are the movers and shakers of the city, and here's a man who goes, you know what, I'm hanging out for Jesus to come back. One of the defining features of a Christian, of a community that serves the true and living God, is that they're waiting for Jesus to come back. Even in Perth, where it feels like he came back, left a bit of heaven here and went back. At least on the coast. But we're not just waiting for Jesus to come back and rescue us from trouble, but to, what does it say? Rescue us, delivers us from the wrath to come. Coming wrath. God's righteous anger displayed in judgment towards all those who worship and serve idols, deadly lies. And who in doing so are pouring scorn on Jesus and his people. And that's almost unbelievable to the rational, scientific 21st century mind. And if you go into your work tomorrow and they say, what do you think the future's going to look like? Well, I actually think that somehow the sky's going to be rolled back like a scroll and Jesus is going to appear. And they go, security, get him out of here. And they'll have your cardboard box packed up in no time. It's sobering. And Instagram is not a very good platform to do sober, is it? Instagram is for non-sober. Not too non-sober, that could get legal. But it's for parties and for fun times and for the opposite of sober. We won't trend on social media if we're a community waiting, longing for Jesus to rescue us for what is going to be a dreadful day of God's anger towards an idolatrous world that has refused to serve him and worships and serves just about anything else he created. But that's the reality. That's why it says on your wall, in this order, Jesus, people, and what's that big word? Eternity. And if longing for Jesus has fallen off the radar in this church or among you, it's not something that you wish for or talk about or plan for, then it's completely possible that we haven't turned to God from idols as much as we say we have. It's completely possible that deadly lies have captured our hearts and we kind of like it here more. We fit in more. It's comfortable. You pull the levers in this culture and the rewards are great. They suit us. People like us. They're not paying out on us for being weirdos. No one knows we serve Jesus because we don't tell them that we do. And even if we did, they might be surprised to hear it. Because we look like we're serving all of the dead idols that they're serving. See, if all we're waiting for is what everyone else is waiting for, the next experience, the next trip, the next relationship, the next whatever, then we might find those plans interrupted by Jesus returning. We might find that we were, tragically, waiting for the wrong thing. And that would be too terrible beyond words, would it not? What are some of the signs that we've stopped waiting for the right thing? Hebrews 10 tells us, do not give up, this is really basic, meeting together, and do so all the more as you see the day approaching. And that's day with a capital D. The more you meet as God's people, the more you will realize that this is not all there is. And a sure sign that you are waiting for something other than Jesus is that you stop meeting together with God's people and spurring each other on towards the day. We don't want to risk that, do we? Because here's the fact. The true and living God might rescue us from the coming wrath today. Today. We'd want to be found waiting. We want to turn. We want to serve. We want to wait. What are we waiting for? Who are we serving? What have we turned to? What have we turned from? Now, we might not look pretty on Instagram, but if the church in Thessalonica is any indication, when you do those things, you will trend. You will trend.